not gonna say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum wine, yeah. You're asking the questions that nobody could. Like where the bone thugs in, are they in harmony? Do, do, help a snowman. Do, help a snowman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another one of these. Today we have something just a little different. Today what we're going to do is I have audio from a show that I did. Not a radio show, a different show. So like a month ago, I got asked if I would be part of a live storytelling thing, right? We all know how this works. This is like one of those... One of your The Moths, one of your the This American Lifes, these sorts of things, right? But it's a live on stage storytelling kind of thing. And I said, sure, I will do this. So I started prepping on maybe the last show, maybe the one before. I kind of gave a preview of what I thought I might do, and I ended up not doing that. Ended up doing something else entirely. And, well, not entirely. It's kind of interesting, I suppose, if you're interested in that sort of thing. You'll see where the roots of what I was going to talk about fed into what I eventually ended up talking about. So I kind of, you know, I had down what I wanted to say and what I talked about on the last show. And then as I went through it, I was like, I'm going to be way over 10 minutes, number one. And number two, I was like, I need this to be more focused because I don't think I can remember like 8 different little stories, and telling 8 different little stories in 10 minutes is not smart. So I decided to just kind of pull a part of it out and tell that story. And so I practiced it, you know, by the time I kind of knew what I wanted to say and where I wanted to go, I think I had like 5 or 6 days left. And so I was like, if I go through this and practice it twice a day, every time, I'll have practiced it 10 times. And I probably ended up practicing it more like 20 times in total. I mean, I was practicing and kind of like honing it and cutting things out and doing different things. And so by the time I got there, I was pretty well practiced. But I'll say that it totally ruined that day. Because I was so nervous, you know, I didn't think I'd be nervous, you know, because at work I get up in front of like 250 middle schoolers and tell them about reading. Like, hey, you should read over the summer, which is like not a popular message, to say the least. So I was like, well, this is easier than that. I mean, if I can do that, I can do this. And so I was nervous, you know, there were a lot of people there to me. I mean, it was probably 75 or 100 or something like that. I don't really know. Probably that much though, right? Something like that. And I was dead last, so that didn't help. Because, you know, I had plenty of time to think about how I could mess it up or, you know, what if you got on stage and just whatever. I had one beer, mostly to calm down, but also just because I had, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours to kill, so why not, right? And it went well. Like, overall, it went well. It ruined the day, but then I was glad I did it in the end because it worked out. And it was a different kind of writing challenge for me. And, you know, I haven't had to write stuff other than Lit Reactor stuff for a while. So it was kind of a good thing for me to do. It was a good thing for me to try out and try and make happen and all that shit. But, yeah, I guess that's most of what I would say. I do have a couple tips if anyone ends up in this situation. If you find yourself in this situation where you're asked to tell a story, something like this, here are my tips. Practice, 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 practice out loud. I mean, I would go on walks at work and practice while I was walking, which I think was good, too, because it you know, I wasn't practicing in the same environment all the time, and there were distractions and things like that. And I was like, it's going to look so weird. But then I thought, well, if I can't handle looking weird to drivers going by, how am I going to handle doing this on a stage? You know what I mean? If I can't handle that level of embarrassment, I think I'm pretty boned. My second piece of advice is, like, structure it such that you have touch points in the story. So, like, mine is basically one long story composed of three stories. I think that it's good to break it up that way, because then you remember everything you have to say. And even if I got totally lost at some point, I could just skip on to the next thing, right? Like, DEFCON a billion would just be, I skipped half of my second story and just had to go on to the third. And it didn't have quite the impact I wanted, but I think it still worked out fine. My third piece of advice is to really work on the ending. And this was something that, you know, I was thinking about before I went and then ended up doing, because, so when I was in the workshop with Chuck, one of Chuck's big things was always end on a gesture. He was big on that. Like, end your short story on a gesture. Don't end on a, you know, I thought this or I felt this or something. He's like, a gesture, a physical gesture. And also to start with something that gets attention, which I know that's not like a big thing, but he described first sentences as being like, he's like, you know, when I see my dog watching a squirrel outside, it's not thinking about the squirrel intellectually. It's just instinct following the squirrel with its eyes and watching what it does. And he was kind of saying, like, that's what your first sentence should be like. It shouldn't be something people think about. It should be something that they just feel compelled to snap to their attention. And the ending thing is important too. Like, when I was working with Tom Spanbauer, that was a big thing for him too, was a lot of people tend to end a story like an essay. And he was kind of against that. He would always advise people against that. But, you know, ending like an essay is ending with something like, you know, and the lesson I learned that day, or like, I was in his workshop a few times when people would tell a horrific story, like about a dead friend or like being sexually abused or something like that. And then they would end it with this, like, but from that day forward, I was stronger and yada, yada. And like, it sort of weakens the impact of the story. And it's like, well, yeah, I understand that, because now you're here telling the story. So I understand that this is not still happening, you know, and I understand that things changed for you. And if the important thing for me to get from the story is that things changed for you, show me in some way. It's kind of the classic show, don't tell, right? But like, especially hitting it home at the end, which is like, don't try and not turn it into an essay. Try and not end with like, and the lesson learned, you know, is blah, 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 or like something like that. I would say you could cheat it if you kind of, if you framed your entire story, if you frame your whole story as like, I'm going to teach you about X, you know, I'm going to teach you the worst way to go on an internet date, right? Then you could end with like a lesson learned, but I think that would be sort of a theme, a horse that's pulling your story throughout. But anyway, in general, these are things that I would say. So these are just like, those are a few quick tips for if you ever do something like this, or you have to give a best man speech or whatever, some shit like that. I mean, if at some point you have to do public speaking, just try something like that. That would be those are my suggestions. Maybe we'll get more in depth into it some other time, but I mean, I've done this exactly once. I'm not exactly Ira fucking Glass, okay? All right, so we're going to hear the audio. That'll be the end of the podcast, too. We're also, you know, Potoween's coming right up. So the next episode you hear, October 1st, will be our third or fourth attempt at a Potoween, which is 31 podcasts in 31 days. There's a theme song. There's prizes to be had if you can complete the challenges set forth by Potoween. The prize this year is going to be pretty awesome. But yeah, so for today, we're just going to do this. I'm sorry if you heard this already and you were expecting a full-length episode. But you should just listen to it again, because fuck it. I mean, you like this show, right? Why not? All right. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you next time.
Me and my girlfriend Cassie moved into this filthy rental house together. Like, you move in with your girlfriend and you have this idea of what it's going to be like in your mind, right? Like, oh, it'll be nice. I'll probably be, you know, stronger than usual, carry her over the threshold because I'm feeling real 1800s-y and stuff. But there was a lot I didn't know. I didn't know that the house across the street would be playing Norteño music from, you know, dawn till dusk every Saturday so loud it rattled all the windows in our house. I didn't know that the front room smelled so much like dog pee that I'd be wondering whether they had dogs or they were just storing a dog pee collection in the convenient storage media of hardwood flooring. And I didn't really know what it meant to move in with a cat. Cassie had a cat, Sicily. And moving in with Cassie meant moving in with Sicily. So I didn't know that cats, like, spread their cat litter all over the floor. And it's like little pee particles all over the floor. I didn't know that, like, how much a cat eats or, like, how to pet a cat or anything. I didn't know that, like, you know, I'd wake up at 2 a.m. and I hear this scratching under the dresser. And it's just got this tiny little opening underneath. And I'm like, it's got to be a mouse or a rat. Like, why do we even have this cat? And so then I see Sicily. She's a little torty. Her head comes popping out from under the dresser. And so she's, like, wiggling out sideways, and she's doing this weird cat, like, warble in her throat the whole time, like, ah! And she's, like, part liquid, part solid coming out, and it's just, like, the most horrifying thing I've ever seen. And she, like, gets out, and her eyes are gigantic, and then she just goes galloping into the other room. I didn't know that when you move into a cat, like, every so often, you get a treat of seeing a demon emerge from hell. Like, that is what I saw. But dating Cassie meant that I had to date Sicily. So I figured, Cassie's going away for the weekend. I'm going to win this cat over. So I used my traditional method as a rich guy and tried to buy her love. And in case you don't know, that's a joke. I moved into Dog Pee Palace, okay? Like, this is not... So I bought her a cat fountain. And if you're unfamiliar with a cat fountain, it's basically like a normal cat water dish, but it's got this pump on the back. A thing that comes up over the top and it dribbles the water back in. So I guess it keeps the water moving and it just kind of sounds like someone's constantly urinating in your kitchen all the time. These are things that cats like. So I set this up, it's in the kitchen and I'm just watching it, waiting for her, right? And she's coming in the kitchen and she walks right past it. And she doesn't just like kind of ignore it, she ignores it the way like, I was at Walmart once to get a smoke detector battery at like 2 a.m. And there's these two dudes having this fight over which Deadpool t-shirt is more metal. And I'm just like, just keep walking. This isn't the time. This is not the time. And she had that focus. So I retreat to the living room and I'm, you know, pouting. Because I'm learning a lesson when you own a cat, which is like, cats are not obligated to like anything, ever. So I'm sitting in there pouting, but then I hear the pee stream kind of get interrupted, right? So I peek over the counter and she's drinking. And pouting goes immediately to gloating. I'm the smartest person ever. I'm so brilliant. Me and Cassie will be at the altar someday and I'll be like, that fountain, that's what did it. And she keeps drinking and I keep gloating. And then I kind of run out of gloating before she stops drinking. And I'm like, I don't know how much a cat this size is supposed to drink. But I know what amount is too much, because she stands up, licks her chops, and just throws up all the water on the floor. So this was kind of our first date night. And I call it like a good bad date, because like, good, because she liked the fountain. Like, not since, you know, I was like 21, 22 in beer have I seen someone that excited about a beverage that they just threw up all over the kitchen floor. But I mean, bad, because like any date that ends in cleaning cat vomit, it's not like A++. So the next time, this is a little complicated, but Cassie's moving to Oregon, and I'm in an apartment, so I'm watching Sicily while Cassie moves her stuff out. So, you know, I know a little bit at this point, so I stack up these IKEA nightstands on top of each other. I put this blanket on top of it. Okay, she's got this blanket. It's this like white fur blanket from IKEA, and it's like a... It's like if Austin Powers had a runner on his desk, this is what he'd have. It's like deep shag. He could put his pencil cup there and whatever. Or it kind of looks like Santa's beard, maybe. It's about that size. Except Cicely's is so gross. She's so gross. Like, she's spreading her litter in my apartment. She's been there an hour. So hers looks more like Santa's beard, but like if he took a cross-country motorcycle trip and then like maybe ended the trip crashing face first into a KFC grease trap, like something like that. But you know, that's her perch, that's her game, right? So she's up there, and I'm getting ready to go to a volleyball game. I play on a rec volleyball team, and our skill level is zero, which is also our number of victories that season. But we did dress up for Halloween. So I throw on this full-body hot dog costume. Only my face is out, right? And just in case you're worried, spoiler alert, we still lost. And me having no peripheral vision and no ability to move didn't really affect my game that much. So I'm in this hot dog costume just kind of milling around, and I take a seat on the couch. And Cicely jumps down from her disgusting blanket, gets right in my lap, and settles down. Now, this is not a normal thing for us. Like, we are not cuddly. She's very cuddly with Cassie. I'll come home a lot, and Cassie's laying on the couch. Cicely's on her chest, and their faces are 1 inch from each other. And I'm like, how long have you guys been like that? She's like, I don't know, a couple hours. She can hear her nose whistling when she breathes. It's so close. But, you know, I could count the number of times this has happened to us on, like, one hand and still have plenty of swearing fingers left. So it's nice, though. We sit there together. It's cool. I go to the volleyball game, lose it, you know, in a professional hot dog manner. Remove my costume, come home. So, you know, I put all my stuff down. I sit back on the couch. She's up in her perch again. Nothing, right? So I'm like, okay. I put this hot dog costume back on. Bam, she is back in my lap immediately. I don't know what it is about regular me that she's like, no. But then hot dog me, she's all about it. Like, it's all she ever wanted. So that was nice. That was like our second little date. And, you know, it was nice. She initiated, which I appreciate. And also, you know, dating Cassie means I have to date Cicely. So it's good I have an outfit. So Cassie and Cicely are out in Oregon. And they've been out there for a little while. And I'm getting ready to go out for Cassie's birthday. I got all her presents packed and everything. It's like 3 days in advance. And I get this phone call from Cassie, and she's like, Cicely's at the vet, and she's not doing too good. So I fly out early, and it was a good thing I did, because I got there just in time for us to let her go. And so, you know, they usher us out of the back of the vet's office, because that's, like, where the real drama happens, is in the parking lot behind the vet, because they don't want us, like, crying and falling on each other, and this guy is just here to get his beagle's teeth cleaned or whatever. So we're out there, and we're crying, and we're hugging next to a dumpster. And Cassie says this thing. She's like, do you think she knew? And I said, do I think she knew what? And she says, do you think she knew that we loved her? And I'm flashing back to the fountain and to, like, their faces like this, you know, and I'm thinking about the presents that I have at Cassie's apartment for her birthday, which is tomorrow. I have three things. A necklace, which is patterned after a sound wave, which is Cicely's meow. I have a matching collar and bracelet set for them that says best friends. And I have a pillow the size and shape of Cicely with her picture printed on the front. It's basically a stuffed animal version of Cicely. So suffice to say, for her birthday, we had to change plans a little bit. And dating Cassie means I have to date Cicely one more time. So, you know, I kept telling you, right? She's gross. And she's spreading her litter everywhere. And we were thinking about it. And it's like, you know, your pet dies. And it's kind of sad. Because it's not like you're going to be downtown and see, like, a statue being erected to your pet. Like, nobody really knows that your pet died. No one knows your pet. So we decided to kind of carry on her work. So we each got a little plastic baggie. And we got the jug of litter. We filled it with kitty litter. Clean. We're not pros like she was. But, you know, we're doing our best. And we decided to just spread it around a little bit. So we go downtown, and we find, like, a park she would like. We put some there, window ledge, whatever. Found a fountain, and I was like, I think she'd probably like that. I have reason to believe. And our ultimate destination is an IKEA. Because, you know, we're of that age, and, like, moving around, that's where all of our furniture is from, right? So I'm putting a couple in, like, the nightstands I used to build her little tower. Shoving some down in between the couch cushions of the couch we had. I throw some under the bed that's like the bed we had that she hid under when the Norteño music was like rattling the house. And we end up at this wire cage full of these, you know, white fur Santa blankets, right? These ones look nice. I did not realize how crappy hers looked until we saw all the new ones. And I was like, wow. And I couldn't answer Cassie's question, you know, did she know that we loved her? I don't know enough about cats. I still don't know. I still don't know, like, how much they're supposed to drink. And I don't know why they like Hot Dog Man. I don't know anything about them. But I know that I loved her. And it changed for me. You know, it changed from dating Cassie meant I had to date Sicily to dating Cassie meant that I got to date Sicily, too. And I knew that this date was a good one. Because all of our good ones were totally ridiculous. And I don't think I've ever felt more ridiculous in my entire life than standing in an IKEA as an adult, crying, rubbing pebbles of kitty litter into a blanket that looks like Santa's beard.